This is Ruth Weiner with my colleague, Bess Karelitz, continuing our interview with Ruth Frank. Today's date is July the 7th, 1997. In going over the tape that we have, there were a few details that weren't included. One of them, of course, was your date of birth.
Is that really so important?
Well, that's on the form, there's a little spot just for that.
November 1st, 1921.
Great, thank you. And we talked about your mother and father.
Do you have some
arithmetic now? I don't have to. Mine's 1922, so I know.
Yeah, I got you beat by a year.
We didn't get your mother's maiden name, her full name.
Stern. Helen Stern was her maiden name. I'll tell you a funny story about that. When my husband, Jimmy, wrote to Hungary for her birth certificate, he found out that her name had been Stern Schuss. They sent back her whole birth certificate, and we found out she was a year older than she thought to. At any rate.
You didn't tell her, though.
Oh, sure we did. I said to her, Mom, your name was Stern Schuss. How come? Why did you drop the Schuss? She says, with a name like Stern, who needs the Schuss? She was a Republican.
Do you remember any stories that she told about her life in Europe?
Not about her life in Europe so much as when she came to this country, and apparently they lived in Brooklyn for a little bit. And one of the things I always remember her telling us is that how she used to dance in the street in the summertime for warm weather, and people would throw pennies. And she always remembered that one. Whenever she heard any music like that, you know, she would remind us about how she danced in the street. Then her whole family moved to Braddock, Pennsylvania. Dad, I guess, no, it was her family. Her father had a relative there. And her father ended up owning a butcher's store. There are years there that I know nothing of. You know, I just can't remember stories. And she did the bookkeeping. And she was excellent with numbers, excellent. And she never could let any of her checkbooks be off by one penny without finding it. So that's where she, you know, those years. And she spoke perfect English. She had no accent at all. So she apparently, you know, went to school and...
Yes. How old was she when she came?
When she came to this country, she was 9 years old. 9 years old. 8 or 9.
Your father's...
Remarkable stories that she told when she was older, I'll tell you about them. We can't skip that many years, so go ahead.
Oh, sure we can. That's what we're talking about. Go ahead.
Family was the most important thing to mother, always. And my grandchildren were just nuts about her, and she was just one of them. But one day, Adam said to her, Adam, Susie's middle son, there was a program on television talking about hell and heaven, and Adam, they were always trying to keep her interested. Adam said, Nan, where do you think you're going to go when the time comes? And she went into deep thought, very serious, this was no joke. And she finally said, Adam, doesn't make too much difference. I've got friends in both places. And she meant it. And so Adam said, well, what do you mean? Well, she said, there were a lot of people who should have been contributing money here and there, and they didn't, you know, so she figured they went down.
Cute.
We never argued with Mother too much. My sister and brother-in-law took her out for dinner. We were in Florida on a very cold night. We let them off at the restaurant. And Irving comes in, and he's rubbing his hands. He says, I am frozen. I couldn't find a place to park. He said, gee, I wonder what the soup du jour is. And Mother looks up, and she says, it's split pea soup. Oh, Irving says, the waiter's been here. Mother said, no, Irving, soup du jour is split pea soup. Well, my sister tried to explain to her that soup du jour was not always split pea soup. The waiter came by a couple minutes later, and Irving said, what is the soup du jour? And of course it was split pea soup. So you just don't argue with her. She always knew.
Oh, cute. Yeah. You told us, of course, about your father. We don't have his full name on tape.
I don't think he had a middle name. It was just Abraham Oringer.
And can you tell us about his mother? I started to ask a little bit more about your father.
Daddy. Mm-hmm. Was a great guy. I don't know too much. He came to this country when he was 17. And I think a brother of his had, or of his had already been here in Braddock. Came directly to Braddock, worked for his brother, ended up buying a mountain, ended up really getting into having a great business. I don't know too much about his parents at all. Oh, I do know this much. They were both killed in a program in Russia. And that's why his siblings came over here. But I don't know much more than that. It was almost like he didn't talk about it after that.
That's quite an experience. Yeah. Can you say something about his siblings?
Dad's siblings?
Mm-hmm.
I never knew many of them. One brother with whom he went to work, I know he ended up buying his furniture store from the first one, and then he passed away very young. Oh, he had a lot of sisters, yes he did. Sure he did. I haven't spent a long time here too. He had family here. He had sisters, that brother.
The brother's name was?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, erase.
I forget. Honestly do. My sister has a better memory about things like that. I know that he passed away young, and we didn't have much contact with him, and I think that's probably why I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember some of his sisters.
Okay. You mentioned your sister would know. Well, we don't have any record of your siblings.
My siblings?
Mm-hmm.
We were four children. First was a brother, and then my sister
Anita.
Milton, and then Anita, then me, I was number three, and my younger sister is Betty, now Betty Abrams.
Tell us something about them. Start with Milton.
Milton was the oldest and the only boy Dad had, and he wanted him to have everything that he never had, and that was a mistake. He was a great guy, but Dad spoiled him. And he always thought that it was only men. I remember when Anita asked to go to college, and Dad said, well, girls don't really need to go to college. You get married and you have children. I mean, that was his old-fashioned way of thinking. He said the same thing to me, said the same thing to Betty. But Milton had to go to college and get his education. Well, we all ended up there, you know. But, what else would you like to know about my siblings? Anita was very young when she died. She had three children. She was only 32.
Oh.
And super kid, you know. We were young. We had great young relationships with each other. We were always a very close family. And my younger sister, Betty, has two children. She's married to Irving Abrams. And she's involved. She won't stop. She's in financial business.
Hmm.
And very excited with it. I mean, and she has to be at home 73. And she still loves it.
Good. That's much. Exciting.
Mm-hmm. I guess none of us was used to sitting around and doing nothing.
That's why we're here.
Mm-hmm. But you're young still. This has told me how old she is.
Okay, I'm 71. What's the difference?
You're the young one here is best.
You talked about your children, but not much about them, just their names.
Oh.
So tell us about that. Start with Susan. And
what we learned from my mother goes right down the line. The most important thing in this world is your family. Our oldest child is Susan. Susan, she's married to Thomas Lippert, who is a lawyer, and she has three boys, and they're just great. Each one of them is off on his own super career. The youngest one has always liked to teach. He went to Costa Rica two summers to teach those children how to brush their teeth. He graduated from Brown, he's now up right outside of Cambridge, Massachusetts, at one of the first charter schools that Massachusetts funded, the state of Massachusetts
mm-hmm.
funded. In the old Camp Devon, the old Army Camp Devon, they're turning into this huge school. And this is he's just finished his second year teaching.
His name is?
That's Jed Lippard.
Jed.
Adam Lippard is the middle one. And he's always been a sports fan. He went to Syracuse and he got the Costa Award there. So funny.
Which is what?
Sports announcing. And then he got his master's in Ohio at some place that is famous for sports master's, you know, for broadcasting. And he got a job with the Orlando Magic. And that's mm-hmm. where he is, and he's already been moved up.
Great.
I mean, he's only 20. Going to be 20, he is 27. And my youngest grandchild is 22, very hard to believe. And Greg is the oldest one, he just was 29, and he just moved on to Atlanta, where he's working, he has a great job. And the family just went down there because he bought a little house down there and had a big reunion on the 4th.
That's lovely.
So that's Susie. Jimmy came next, and I'll tell you a funny story about Jimmy. When he was about 2 years old, and we lived on Forest Glen Road, this doesn't all have to, you don't have to listen to all this.
Oh, we got,
he opened the bottom drawer of his dresser and climbed into it, you know, and then opened the next one. He was after something on top of that dresser. And the next thing we knew, the whole dresser went over. Jed sent me this Mother's Day, a card of a little boy in the bottom drawer of a dresser. And Jimmy has been in Rome, he works for Boeing. Has been with him for many years, and he's just nuts about Italy, which I can understand, because he likes to eat, because we all like to eat, because my mother was a great cook and taught us all how to cook. Anyway, he got bounced up to a more important job in Brussels, Belgium, and he had to leave Italy, which really hurt. But he's now working on that European Union, with the European Union. Boeing, you know, is trying to take over McDonnell Douglas, and the European Union is fighting it. So his wife, Catherine, sent us an article about a month ago, and it was lead article in the business section of the International Herald Tribune, talking about Jimmy Frank speaking with the European Union. So I had Jimmy photograph that card of this little dumb kid in the bottom drawer, and I sent him a note and said, who would think a kid so dumb as to get into the, you know, try to get to the top, and by getting into the drawers would end up on top doing what you were doing. So he's got a nice new job in Brussels now. That's number two, son.
Yeah.
Linda lives in Ithaca. She went to Cornell. She met her husband at Cornell. And
his name?
David Ruth. She has two children, a girl who's very, very cool artist. She graduated from Rhode Island School of Design, very, very talented. And she has a son who just graduated also from Brown, who, since he's been about this big, can't tell that how big that is, has fiddled, loves his violin. And I must say that while it's very hard to listen to him years ago, it's pretty easy to listen to now.
He just,
Sebastian Ruth. He just got a $10,000 fellowship from the city of Providence to teach underprivileged children a love of music and maybe how to play the violin.
That's wonderful.
Isn't that
That's
nice?
Fabulous, yes.
I've got some great grandchildren, but I'm going blank on Frank because my youngest kid is not married, a boy. My husband always said the most orderly thing I ever did, the only order I could, is to have a girl, then a boy, then a girl, then a boy. He's right.
And your youngest son's name?
Billy. William. We come from a family of Williams best. Jimmy's great-great-grandfather came to this country in the early 1800s. I think I told you, all those bottles down the river. So he was a William Frank, and there's been a William Frank in every generation. Different names. Been a William
Frank. You comment about, in the religious background, that your father was a member of Beth Sholem and
My father was a member of Beth Sholem, he was a member of Sher Torah, he was a member of every synagogue there was would come to Daddy and ask for money, and you give him money.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Hillel Academy up there.
Yes. You know, yes.
He was a good schmuck.
But the family, when you went to services, you went to...
We went to Rodershalm.
He went with you to Rodershalm.
No, he didn't. No, Daddy always went to Vachon. Mother and the rest of us would go to Rodershalm. But he preferred the others. He always went to Vachon. I guess he went down to... I don't remember his ever going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
we lived right, you know, half a block away from Vachon. And he would go walking down. He was religious. He cared about religion a great deal, but he wasn't. He didn't.
I know what you mean.
He didn't keep that religious either. I mean, you know,
it wasn't traditional.
No, he wasn't. He mm-hmm. was more secular. But mm-hmm. He still belonged to Bishop.
You talked about living close to this area, and you talked a little bit about walking to Colfax. Tell us more about.
Bess knows about that.
Yeah.
We would walk to Colfax, and I mean, it was nothing of a walk, but we'd go down through Stanley Cann's house, and he let us do it. You know, that's the amazing thing. He never stopped anybody from going down those steps. I wonder who built those steps.
He did. I heard he did. I don't remember if I'm right.
Why?
But I heard. I don't know. He didn't have children that would use it, did he?
I don't Not that would use it. He had children, but
they
didn't
older.
Go to Colfax
no,
or
that's
anything.
Right.
That's the funniest thing, those steps.
Yeah, that I heard he had built them. I don't know why.
But we loved to go
behind
down
his garage
and walk to Colfax. And every once in a while, on a cold day, Daddy would put us in the car and drive us. And he was the worst driver there ever was. I remember sitting in the rumble seat once and doing a spin going around that corner. Terrible driver. Mother felt we were much better off walking to Colfax.
Can you remember something about your school days, either at Colfax or at Alderdice?
Well, I guess I always managed to stay there. I don't remember being, I mean, I always got good grades with doing the minimum. I was much more interested in sports. But I never remember studying forever over my books. But I made honor roll and mm-hmm. things like that, you know.
Good.
I did care much more about the other things.
I can appreciate that. Somewhere along the line, you mentioned being out of school for a while. Was there an illness or something that...
I did mention that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember ever being out of school.
So generally your health was good and you did all
yeah.
the things?
Yeah, I don't remember saying that.
As I look around here, we'll move up to Buka, I am just overwhelmed with the artifacts, the pieces of art from various places, obviously.
All around the world.
All around. How did that happen?
You know, I really don't know what started me on that. I really don't. Excuse me. Loved to travel, and whenever I was traveling and found something that was different, that I'd never seen before, I'd start reading about it, get the history of it, and collecting. It's probably how I got into business, too. I mean, I had no intention of doing that. We were in it. Did I do this yet?
Yeah, a little bit, but...
Our son, Billy, the youngest... was at Friends World College, a Quaker school in the East. And he spent his first year there. His second year, he's...
Name the school again, Quakers.
Friends World College. He spent his first year in England studying. His second year, he went to an island, a Greek island, where they raised olives. That was their big production. He was there. And he learned
Which
to speak.
Island?
I forgot the name of that island right now. My grandson, Sebastian, just was there and met the people with whom he lived.
Oh,
and
yes.
they talked again after all these years. His third year, he was going to spend in India, and he was traveling over, you know, on land. And he was in Iran, went on to Afghanistan, and just fell in love with the people, the history of the country. And wrote to the school and said, could he stay there instead of going on? And we went to visit him. They said yes, of course, and we went to visit him. And that was in 1971. And the nomadic people in Afghanistan, traveled with all this jewelry on their backs. I mean, silver. They would travel with a silversmith. If they had a good year of growing produce and things, the silversmith would make them more of this wonderful jewelry that I had never seen before. And I love to shop. I guess you gathered that. So I was shopping and found some of this. They had had a terrible drought that year, and they had had to sell everything off their backs. And in the bazaar, I bought some things and came home to play with them. I didn't know anything about making jewelry or anything, but I sat on the floor up there and began stringing things. And I remember shopping at Bondo. I did tell you this, well, then I don't have to tell you again.
Yeah. But it takes more than just doing it. You have to learn how to put things together.
Well, I learned. I learned because I did it wrong, and it broke. So then you go and you study some more. So maybe the second time it wasn't quite perfect. But the first time I went to Saks in New York, did I do this one too?
No.
I went down, I had an introduction, and I went down with about 20 pieces that I had made. And they flipped over them. I was one of the first people to take ethnic stuff and mix it up. But the buyer is handling one piece and it breaks in his hand, and he looks and he says, what kind of chain did you put this on? I said, oh, pure silver. He said, that was your first mistake. He said, that pure silver chain is very soft. I mean, I learned the hard way, you know, because I don't even think I'm sure I could have learned. I'm sure there were people who would have taught me, but I guess I did a lot of, that was me. I did a lot of things myself. I learned gardening myself. When I get interested in something, I take it up.
Mm-hmm. Tell us something about the pieces around.
They're from all over the world. Not all of them bought all over the world, but they are things from all over the world. It's a very eclectic collection of things. I just love different things, I guess. I've bought, in our travels, most of the things that you see were Iran. We made good friends with the Jewish community in Iran.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How did you happen to go to Iran?
On our way to Afghanistan. Oh, and my husband had some business in
that's,
Iran,
that's
too.
The...
He absolutely did. He was in an international business, and he had business in Iran. That's how come we made this visit to Afghanistan. We figured we'd do both at once.
I see.
Neighboring countries.
Since you were in Iran anyway.
Yeah, and we went on.
What's your husband's business?
He's had several. Yes. He's... want me to go way back?
Basically, what is it?
Basically, now he's... I would say he's semi-retired. But he was in the map-making business. His family once ran a... Old Webster Hall Hotel they owned, and he was doing that. Remember that right back then? Hate to take you back like that. Then he went into aerial mapping. That was his big business for a while. And then after he gave up that, he got into international business of selling things that were American-made in countries abroad, like Medrad, that started the first defibrillator and stuff like that. He was into that kind of thing. Now he's semi-retired.
And so because of business, you started this...
I was able because of travel. Well, even before we traveled on business, we loved to travel, both of us, and we loved going to places that... And on our own, always. We have yet to be on a cruise or on a tour. I mean, if we get someplace and don't like it, we can pick up and leave the next day. You know, we don't go scheduled trips. And if we like something, we'll stay on, you know? Getting off of a ship, and I guess maybe as we get older, we'll be able to do that more.
One second, let's see how far. More currently, at this time, before we go more into the jewelry, what is your involvement in the Jewish community? We have some little notes here on the Western Pennsylvania Historical Society.
That's my husband, full on. He's so lucky. He can go back to the 1700s, and recently someone wrote him something about 1600s of his family in Bavaria. He is so lucky to have that. His great-great-grandfather gave him a Bible and listed every marriage, every birth, everything. You know, he really, there is his Holy Bible right there. That was just, he loves doing that. So he's very much interested in the Historical Society now, of course, and getting all the people who have been in Pittsburgh to put in their history of their families. And it's not easy. He spends an awful lot of time with that. Excuse me. Me, right now, I don't do very much anymore, except give money. I started off being very active in the Jewish community. I was head of women's division of the UJF. I worked for the hospital, and I did an awful lot. But then I think I got to a point where it was very tough asking for money all the time for different organizations. And then when I started doing the jewelry business, I really became much more laid back as far as that goes. I'm still very much interested in it and still support everything. But I have to get out like all functional health tennis, you know, I stopped working.
I do know. Yes.
And these young kids have taken over anyway. And a lot of the times they think a lot differently than we did.
There were things here.
What do you think is your most significant accomplishment? That's a hard question.
Probably would take my tell you my family. And that's the way I do feel. The most important thing in my life. And they're great, great kids. We got it all from Mom and Dad. To me, that's the most important thing in my life.
As you look back, is there something that you might have done differently?
Oh, a lot of things. When you look back and see these kids today, do you feel that you would have done things a little differently? Sure, I would have. Number one, I would have never smoked, which is our joke. Which is, did you ever smoke? Yeah. You still do it? I mean, things like that, stupid things that we didn't know about.
No.
I mean, certainly we're intelligent enough to know when information comes out that's vital, we're going to stick with it. I mean, you know, learn. What would I have done differently? No, I would have been, you would have raised your children differently too, don't you think? You would have, I mean, these kids, I take a trip now and I find these kids in their backpacks on their back, they were with them every minute. I did everything that we knew how to do at the time. But you sometimes think, boy, if I had known that 50 years ago, wouldn't that have been great?
Do you see many changes in Pittsburgh today over the years?
Aside from, well, one of the things Jim and I were talking about yesterday was I used to have to clean the ring around the pool 3-4 times a week. You know, the black soot mm-hmm. from all the smoke. I don't do it once the whole summer. That's changed in Pittsburgh, and you know why that's changed. But we were talking about that the other day. Really different city, isn't it? But the thing that I notice so much about Pittsburgh is that we're missing a young generation. And I think that's kind of sad. Of all my friends, the only ones whose children have stayed here are the ones who had businesses that they've gone into. The young people don't seem to want to stay here. They go elsewhere looking for their jobs. Have you noticed that too? Well, we've lost a lot of our population because of that.
Oh, yes. Half of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you might want to now show us around to see the jewelry so that we can have some
Such
sort of a record?
Mess.
Oh, great.
Okay, the one thing I have to tell you is that I'm a mess, huh, when it comes
no,
to things
don't
like
worry
that.
About that.
Okay. You promise you won't tell, huh?
Oh, that part we're not interested in.
Okay.
I'm not going to clean it up for you.
Okay. I when I started, I was what? 72. Oh, I was just in my early 50s. necklaces. I used to sit on the floor with my legs underneath me, you know, buckling underneath me, and make all my necklaces fall over the floor. I can't do that anymore. I have to stand up now. So I'm much more messy now than I used to be.
Let's take a look.
Sure.
Tell us something about your experiences in Iran with the Jewish community in Iran.
Well, when we first went to Iran, of course, I went rushing to the bazaar to shop. And they were very cordial, looking for business from Americans and from anybody. After about 6 or 7 years in Iran, I really wasn't welcome in the bazaar. I'll never forget the last year that I went shopping there, and I went up to a man with whom I'd done business for years and years, and he wouldn't wait on me. He just ignored us both. And that was the year, just a couple months later, that the Shah got thrown out.
End of tape one, side two, to be continued on tape two.
But one of the interesting things in Iran was, excuse me, some of the people with whom we did business were Jewish. And, oh, they had such collections that went way back, you know, 10th, 11th century. One man in particular, I'm going to recall, he had this wonderful